In an abandoned underground city at the Spanish coast near Malaga, I found a USB stick containing 300 random movies, from arthouse to weird, from obscure to notorious. Now, in lockdown, it is time to watch and discuss them all in an international podcast project. Two Turks and a German, two filmmakers and a mystery man. Welcome to Mysterium Pictorum. Welcome, welcome to Mysterium Pictorum. This time we watched the movie Bez Konja. I slaughtered that name because I do not speak any Polish. We watched No End by Krzysztof Kieślowski, another name I surely slaughtered. And how did everybody like it? Nisan, how did you like it?
I liked it. I was not in the right mood for it because I feel sick. The movie I liked, I just couldn't enjoy it that much, but it's because of me, not because of the movie.
Fascinating. Jaren, how did you like it?
I enjoyed it, actually. It was fun.
I enjoyed it too. Maybe I was in the right mood for it. It hooked me instantly. I was surprised by that. And like thinking about it afterwards, this is shaping up in my head to be sort of precisely the perfect movie for me. Like it's such an interesting mixture of like political stuff and then, I don't know, philosophical stuff. And it's even, there's a ghost in there. So it's
genre.
It's basically a horror film.
And it's depressing.
Yeah, it's awesome. I liked it a lot.
It's a much better version of a ghost story.
Yeah, I was saying that. Like, I don't know if I agree on the much better part, but yeah, probably like a more substantial version. Like, I still really love a ghost story, and I love David Lowery's work in general. But I thought the same thing. Like once I realized this is a dead guy observing his family grieving, I thought, okay, Lowery has some explaining to do.
And somehow this couple in this movie, you kind of cared more than you cared about Casey Affleck and what was the name of the
Rooney Mara.
Yeah, because you see them for like 10 minutes before everything happens, so there's no character buildup.
I mean, in this one you don't see the couple at all together, you just see her grieving. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know, but they were more interesting characters. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Like their work, they weren't that self-involved. You learned stuff about him. And on top of all of this,
and also they were, you know, not that privileged. She was grieving, but she also had so much other stuff. She couldn't like be in grief like Rooney Mara and then just go on with her life.
Rooney Mara.
Whatever. I say it every time is wrong, right?
Yeah. You just really want her to be Irish.
No, I just think O'Mara sounds so much cooler.
Why isn't she called Rooney O'Mara? All right, but before we jump right into it, let me quickly sum up the story. So, when the film starts, we are greeted by Antek. Antek is in his 30s, he's a lawyer, and he is dead. He has recently died. I think he died on the 13th of December.
Oh, also on a car accident, like in a ghost story.
Yes. He says he died in a car accident, or at least in a car. Yeah, right. And his wife and son, they are grieving. Antek has been a lawyer, and the last case he was working on was of a man who organized a strike. And this man is now in prison because that was illegal. This is taking place in 1982, I think, while Poland is in social unrest. There is like martial law. There's a whole lot of history that we will talk about without knowing anything about because it's relevant to this movie. But yeah, he organized a strike and he's in prison now. This man's wife now comes and pressures Antek's wife, who is called Ulla, I think. Is that right?
Yeah.
The strike organizer's wife comes and pressures
Ula into helping her. She gives her like the file. She points her to Antek's mentor, an older lawyer who accepts the case, even though he doesn't usually accept political cases, because the last political prisoner he tried to defend was then killed. All of that is taking place. So now we have these two plots, Antek's grieving wife and the courtroom drama.
Also, she's not just his wife. She also has her profession and stuff. She's a translator.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting. You should have remembered that, Nisan. Does that mean anything special to you?
Yes, my mom is a translator.
Okay. So yeah, she's a translator and she's translating Orwell's 1984. And she gives it to another character in the film, and the character dies of cancer soon after. It's a sad thing. It's a depressing movie. So there are basically these two main plots to the movie. It's this courtroom drama and it's Antek's wife and son grieving. In the grieving plotline, there is Antek's best friend who wants to fuck his grieving wife, but she doesn't want to. She wants to rather be fucked by a random American. And then she tries to forget Antek by being hypnotized. But instead of forgetting him, she sees him and shows him her middle finger. It seems to be a ritual between the two of them. And that's a lovely scene, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tells so much about them.
I also like that she saw him and the other guy saw him too at some point.
While all of that is going on, the strike organizer in prison, he does not want to deny his involvement or his being a leader of the strike. His new lawyer wants him to deny all that. Antek had some sort of poetic strategy. The new lawyer is pragmatic and he wants the strike organizer to get with the program, to get out of prison. The lawyer's apprentice wants the political prisoner to fight, which would mean him staying in prison for a long, long time. The political prisoner then, he doesn't fight. He does get set free, which makes everybody very sad in the end. And then Ula, Antek's wife, goes home and kills herself. And yes, after being set free, the political prisoner does see Antek, who looks at him disappointedly. Yeah, and that's the story. In the end, Ula and Antek walk into the distance together, and now they are happy again. Nisan?
You missed also one important part. Antek and Ula have a child, and he is grieving too. And at the end...
Yeah, and then no one gives a shit about the kid.
Yes. Including me.
Including you. And at the end, she brings him to her mother. And that's really sad for that kid. Like, his parents are gone. And you don't give a fuck about that kid.
No. That kid looked like someone I know.
Neither did anyone in the storyline. So.
Yeah,
no.
Even sadder.
Nobody gave a fuck about the kid.
It's one of my notes. Jacek is a dog shit guy. Like, dog shit kid. No one gives shit about it.
I am lacking a shit ton of context to actually understand this movie fully, because this film is a political allegory. That's not hidden. That's not subtext. Apparently, this is very clear text. Two people who are in the know of the political situation of the time in Poland. But before we dig into all of that, there are plot details I am unclear about, and maybe you guys have understood these parts better than me. So, for example, the father of the wife of the political prisoner. I'm bad with names, which makes this confusing. He brought said wife a newspaper in which it said that people at the strike organizer's workplace were forming a union. Now, that was horrible to her. This newspaper was then brought to the political prisoner by his lawyer, the old guy who wanted him to be pragmatic. And he said, he first commented on the article being in a party newspaper. Then he took a look at the article and then he was distressed. And he said one of the organizers was his childhood friend and not his friend anymore now. So he was angry about that union being organized, if I understood correctly. Mm-hmm. But why was the strike organizer angry about a union being formed? I didn't understand that. And then...
Because in the Germanic utopia that you live in, you might not see this a lot, but... what they usually do to suppress unions is to form an alternative union who's siding with the whoever, capital owners. So that's what that was about.
Okay, good. Thank you for that explanation. Because yes, here in Germany, we actually do have the best union in the world. Why am I saying that?
Because your dad works.
I'm proud of my dad. Okay. So
the first time I heard you say something nice about the German system.
Okay. Thank you for clearing that up. So that's why he was angry. But why was this newspaper article a chance? Why did it present a chance for the political prisoner to get out of jail? I didn't understand that.
Something about 80s. That's how people usually got their news at the time.
No. I mean, no. No, the lawyer said these news mean mm-hmm. that you can get out of here. How?
I mean, it's kind of technical lawyer mumbo jumbo, but he says he's been only involved with that union that he's in jail for only once or twice. So he could say he's supporting the idea of a union. He was just not with those guys. So if he can get the pro-government, whatever union to talk on his behalf, he can, you know, go out free.
Okay, so that
friend... And that's what he did.
Okay, so that friend who wasn't his friend anymore was supposed to then, like say he's a great guy and then that way he could get out. Okay. Great, thank you. This is great. I'm learning stuff. In the end... Everyone was incredibly sad once he got off. I get that symbolically.
Yeah, it's Poland that died. Not
exactly. Exactly. So let's quickly talk about the symbols here. So Antek, if I remember correctly, Antek said he died at the 13th of December. Is that right?
I don't remember the date.
Okay, I might imagine that, but that's the date when martial law was installed in Poland. And anyway. Antek stood for like the Polish spirit, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Antek's approach as a lawyer, as it was described, was apparently compromise. It was bringing everyone together. So like some sort of national spirit died, symbolized by Antek. And now in the courtroom scene, in the end, the Polish people, or rather the Polish worker, bowed down to martial law. And accepted it, and that was sad.
Yeah, they weren't sad because he was free.
I think all these things are quite specific to the time and place, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. some of it went right over my head. So Antek, some sort of Polish spirit, maybe like the unity of a people, because when they described what Antek was about to do in front of the judge, they talked about how he was going to bring both sides together and agree on this being madness or something. So he presented some sort of compromise.
Yeah, like a social democrat.
Yeah. I mean, fuck Antek then.
Yeah, I'm see the hero.
Yeah, right.
No, Antek is the idealist guy.
Yeah, but that's not idealism. Do you know what idealism is? Guillotines. Those are idealism. The Robespierre speech. That's
okay. So idealistic. He's the realist idealist. He is a kid. Maybe he was the only one who gave shit about the kid, so he didn't want to risk himself.
That's actually valid, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, Jacek too. Like he's the Polish youth. He's mm-hmm. just abandoned.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
that's really sad.
Yeah.
And then he dies just like that because of. Heart attack or in a car or car accident?
Heart attack.
Heart attack.
Yeah, he had a heart condition.
Oh, okay. But it was not like he didn't took his life.
No. He died suddenly.
Being heroic.
No. It was the thing they talked about only he four or five times.
He died while waiting for a woman to get ready.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Does that remind you of anything, Nisan?
What do you mean?
He died while waiting for a woman to get ready?
Because I take so long to get ready, or what do you mean?
that was Jaren's joke there, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you're asking me something political, smart question, and I was like, fuck! What?
No, it wasn't politically unsmart. It was just sexist.
What are they talking about?
Do you remember how Marx wrote about waiting for a woman to get
it? I was like, something like that.
All right. So yeah, let's maybe look at what everybody did. So the workers were humiliated and got with the program and kind of bowed their heads and took it in stride. The intelligentsia, I guess, would be personified by his wife, for example, who killed herself, and his friend. Who said he was going to leave the country. And I think the friend even said, you either die or leave the country.
Yeah, you're right. She also said, when the friend said he's leaving the country, was it after the court scene or before?
That was way before.
Ah, okay, because he also said, when she asked him, isn't it too easy just to leave? And he said...
Why shouldn't I have it easy?
Yes. Why should we always make it hard?
Yeah.
And couple scenes later, the court scene happened. So maybe that was also...
Yeah, right. So everything...
Building up.
Everything works as a symbol or a metaphor. And then there's the lawyers, the two lawyers. One of them, seemingly a political radical, who would be more likable. Would he not just go to the worker and ask that guy to fight that fight for him, right?
Yeah.
And then there's
he has a kid too, and he wants other people to sacrifice in his beliefs.
And then there's the old lawyer who's just pragmatic and doesn't really give a fuck. Yeah,
or he does. I don't know. Yeah, I would be a lawyer, I wouldn't want my client to die too.
But he was so sad too in the end.
Makes it even more sad.
The one time that old lawyer didn't seem depressed and angry was the time when he and the young lawyer made up the plan about how they could get the worker to give an impassioned speech and get a bad sentence.
Yeah.
That was so he really wanted the worker to fight too. He just thought it wouldn't be the smartest thing to do.
Yeah, and he didn't want him to... sentence to death penalty.
So this would count as poetically political cinema too, right?
Yeah.
No, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, but it's pretty obvious if you don't know anything about Polish or even European politics.
But it also works perfectly fine as a drama, doesn't it? Like a depressing drama.
Sure. I could also see an American remake of it. It would be boring, but... would work.
Oh yes, I could so see an American remake of this.
No, it wouldn't be boring. It would be cheesy. Sorry.
Yeah. It would
be very entertaining. Actually.
Yeah, yeah. Antek would have a lot more to do. He would quip into the camera. He'd be played by Ryan Reynolds, and he would make jokes. Yeah, sure. And then like the old lawyer, there is even an American actor who looks exactly like.
Is Michelle Williams?
I don't. Know who that is.
You know Michelle Williams, this actress who is always sad in movies. Blue Valentine woman.
Oh, from Dawson's Creek.
Jen from Dawson's Creek.
Does she have...
She has nice boobs, if that's the question.
You know me too well. I wasn't even gonna actually ask that, because I thought in the moment my head formulated the question, I thought, no, I'm just gonna edit that out. This is just gonna create more work for me.
Now it's too funny to edit that out.
Yeah, let's skip that and talk about how brave this actress was. Because this role required some intense stuff, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's the same actress, but I think I saw her in another Keselowski project.
In Dekalog.
Yeah, and maybe I'm racist towards Polish people.
You definitely are.
Or that's the same actress. She also played a really brave role, I would say.
You mean the episode with the
where she's molesting a teenager and
Yaren, what did you think about this performance?
I don't look at it the same way as you do. You know, you've been in so many movies and stuff. I don't think it was that demanding. She was like a less depressed version of a, I don't know, any kind of Soviet movie woman around the same time.
No, but for example, that scene in which she was masturbating and they had this whole camera setup that went from the ceiling down to her face, and then her kid was yelling for her. That was a brave scene to do.
Is it brave? I don't know. It's a good scene, but it's an actor's job. They should be able to do it.
It's not every actor's job to masturbate in front of cameras. Those are a special kind of actor.
Do you think they actually masturbated?
No. Lars.
I think she actually masturbated, of course.
I feel like you kind of have a crush on her.
No.
Not from the moment he saw those boobs.
Yeah. I thought Michelle Williams could never compare to this woman. No, I think there was a lot. Like then the sex scene later, it's just a very revealing performance in many ways.
No, I thought she did a great job too.
I liked all the actors. The only actor I didn't like was the American. His name was Danny Webb. He's known as Morse from Alien 3. Nissan, remember him from Alien 3?
Wait, what was he in Alien 3?
Mors in Alien 3.
Who's Mors?
I don't know. You like Alien 3.
I watched it.
Like, it's your favorite Alien part.
No, first Alien is my favorite Alien part. And I watched them when I was 12 or something. I only thought that it was set up in a prison. I thought that was cool when I was 12.
All right, Jaren, did you recognize him from your Alien 3 watching experience?
I don't think I've seen Alien 3.
What? Why haven't you seen Alien 3?
I'm not an alien guy.
What do you mean you're not an alien guy?
They never appealed to me, alien movies. The first one is okay, but meh.
Okay, so the first one is okay. Then you watched the shit second one and thought you're not an alien guy. Like, what's wrong with you? Watch Alien 3. And Alien 4, it's really, really
Since
quirky.
When are you...
There's a fourth one?
Yeah, there's a fourth one. By the director of Amélie. Now imagine that.
What?
Yes. The Amélie director did a sequel to Alien. And it's amazing.
Okay. Isn't that one with Winona Ryder?
It's the really, really 90s one, yes.
Yeah.
With all the crazy camera movements and all of that. Okay, not an alien guy. So Danny Webb, you guys, did you like Danny Webb's performance in this?
Which character was that?
The only American character in the movie.
Was he really American?
His name is Danny Webb and he was an Alien 3.
But I really thought that was some Polish guy who spoke English fluently.
Well, he wasn't.
That's so weird because he was so weird.
Yeah, Jaren, did you?
I'm sorry, I'm really not that person who is, well, not on record, who is talking bad about people's appearances.
Yeah, his body hair.
What was with his body hair?
His body hair.
Problematic. He had a patch of fur on his lower back. Did you see that, Jaren?
I
mean, the patch
I
of fur.
I see that every day.
But like, it was so weird because it was. Oh, I'm.
He didn't have any hair anywhere.
Yes, it was only at that place.
It was like he specifically left that patch when shaved. Yeah, but why?
I think you're expecting a lot from actors from 80s. And
yes.
Body shaming people. So
yes, we are horrible people.
Well, body shaming boomers. Come on, that's okay. That's fine. They taught us. We learned it from them.
Anyway,
these films, Decalogue later, even more to me, always look like old family photos from the late 80s and early 90s. Like right before pastel colors arrived and made everything look different. Do you guys know what I mean? Like even the like the whole color palette, like mm-hmm. the whole color palette. That's a lot like pictures that my parents would have lying around from them and their friends when they were young and
yeah, like hip. Blurry kind of.
Yeah.
Everything is like pastel colorish.
Washed out colors, everything was depressing.
Yeah, I also know what you mean, but
the world was so depressing before we arrived, you guys.
Yeah, we are the special kids.
We brought the spark into this depressing world.
Sure.
What will we leave once our generation dies? Like, the world goes back to being depressing and drab and gray. Well, they deserve it. That's fucking Gen Z.
That's the same actress, by the way. I was not being racist.
Okay.
I just Googled it. I don't know if you guys still remember what I'm talking about, but I need to find out.
You're the one who forgets and doesn't care about what we're talking about.
I do care.
Happy to welcome you back into the conversation, though.
I listened. Yes, my parents have those kind of pictures too. But in their pictures, the weather looks better than in these Polish movies and in your parents' pictures.
Yes, because we have the same weather.
I think Poland is even colder, but I've never been there. I don't know.
But Poland, in my mind, is a cold and sad place. And Kieślowski movies just make me make me hold on to that image. I have not seen anything bad by Kieślowski yet, I have to say.
Me neither. I thought this first strike movie we watched, I liked that too, but this one liked more.
It's so weird. The first strike movie we watched, this one, and then stuff like The Irishman. Unions are always depicted as being such a badass and dangerous thing, and it's always like I grew up among strike organizing. Like, strike sounds so incredibly boring to me. It's like the boring stuff that dad does. It's weird. Yeah, we do take unions for granted here, I guess.
So your dad is not a gangster like Al Pacino?
I don't know.
Maybe he is. We don't know.
We don't know. I don't know.
Maybe he has a gun somewhere.
I once found a book in one of those little libraries about like a groundbreaking union success. It was a case that had riveted the nation in the early 90s. And I gave that to him for Christmas because I thought, fun union story. And he opened it and said, oh yes, that was me. So wow. So maybe he's more badass than I picture him being.
See, he kept talking about his dad this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's a union movie. That's my only reference to unions, because I am not organized with my fellow workers. No. I'm wholly victim to the neoliberal mindset.
Me too. Well.
Yeah. Yaron, are you organized?
I'm not able to declare anything on that subject.
All right. did this film remind you of The Leftovers?
No.
No, not at all?
No.
Because it was like so grounded and such a drama, and still had some, you know, supernatural stuff in there.
I mean, that was there any supernatural stuff apart from that reappearing, I guess, question mark?
Well, there was a ghost.
I mean, yeah, there was a ghost just hanging around there, not doing shit.
Yeah, then is a ghost not supernatural to you?
But do you have a ghost hanging around there?
In your flat?
No, I mean, it was our ghost. They didn't give a shit about the ghost in the movie.
I mean, she didn't
answer the question, though.
Yeah, she did go to hypnosis and then saw him. Then she went back to see him again, and the guy didn't want to do that. Then
do you believe in mediums, Bryce?
Well, I don't, which is why to me this stuff felt supernatural. This conversation is being taken in an interesting direction. Yaron, do ghosts regularly hang out in your apartment?
I hope so. I have a good place to hang out, I'm sure. If I was a ghost, I would hang out with you.
Are you personally acquainted with any mediums?
I met a couple. I couldn't say I'm buddies with them. But I mean, it's more common in Turkey to come across people like that, because everybody has some, I don't know, aunt or something that is really good at fortune telling and stuff.
Actually, interesting fun fact, every time I travel, I become aware of how, not just Turkey, in Britain too, and in the US, you will come across like little shops where people will tell you that they will tell you your fortune, or they can talk to ghosts and stuff like that. That doesn't exist in Germany, like at all. And I saw that in every major and minor city in every other country I've traveled to. So I'm thinking maybe it's illegal in Germany. I don't know.
That's interesting. It's also not so legal, common to be interested in star signs in Germany, like in other countries, in my experience.
No, it's really frowned upon. But okay, so you've met mediums. So has anything genuine ever occurred?
No, not to my knowledge.
That's disappointing now. There was such a setup. All right, so...
One time, my mom, when she was like in her 20s, she told me that story. She went to a medium for a laugh. And then she said to her, the medium, one day you're going to move to Germany with your daughter. And my mom said, I don't have a daughter and I don't think I'm going to move to Germany. And then one day she moved to Germany with her daughter.
Yeah, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
No, she doesn't. She still doesn't believe in it. But she told me that once as a very weird story. She couldn't make her kids a daughter, you know. I don't say that this medium was right. It was just a very weird coincidence. So stuff like that can happen.
I mean, lots of people from Turkey moved to Germany with their daughters.
Yeah, maybe my mom looked like someone who's going to leave the country once. So.
All right, so this didn't remind you of The Leftovers at all?
No.
Nisan, did it remind you of The Leftovers? It's like The Leftovers, isn't
it? Yes, it did. I said that myself.
Yeah, it's a lot like The Leftovers.
Also because we watched this other...
Dekalog. Dekalog. Whatever. The Keselowski.
Yeah, but it's an anthology series.
Yeah, Dekalog.
And we watched it and it also reminded me of Leftovers. So maybe we get now this Keselowski style and vibes. And I think Damon Lindelof, or maybe the author of The Leftovers, were kind of inspired by Keselowski.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that they are Keselowski fans, and Yalin, he just doesn't see it. The look of the film also reminded me a lot. Like, it's set in Warsaw, right?
I don't know, actually.
They say it at some point, don't they?
Then yes, it looks like a city, big city.
Yeah, reminded me of Buchholz.
Really?
Yeah, because of the gray, all the gray. It's so gray everywhere.
Well, it's a cold country and Poland and Germany are really close.
I think it's more the buildings.
Which makes it even crazier that they are so different in different situations, right?
What, Polish and Germans?
Yeah. No, I mean the countries.
Ah, well, that's because, you know, a couple of years ago, Germany actually attacked Poland and bombed the place to the ground and never properly repaired them. And while the Americans...
You mean a couple of years ago or 100 years ago?
I mean, in the beginning of the Second World War.
I was like, did I miss something? Did that happen
yeah,
again?
What the fuck?
After,
what, Merkel, what?
No. I'm speaking a couple of years in the world's age.
Yes.
And then Germany never properly repaired Poland and the US poured money into West Germany. And that's why the situations are so different. They are not so different if you just compare East Germany with Poland.
I've never been to East Germany as well.
How have you never been to East Germany? Yeah, you've been to Dresden. We've been to Dresden together.
Oh, yeah.
You've been to Berlin, I'm sure.
Yeah, you've been to East Berlin at some point.
I don't know. Maybe one time with you, when we, when you, you remember the story?
When I lost my phone.
It's such a funny story, though. Let me tell it. You can edit it out later. Me and Lars were in West Berlin, like normal people, in a döner shop. We were eating and it was like shit. And we waited like almost an hour for a lahmacun or something.
No. We waited for over an hour to get the bill. Yeah, and they kept ignoring us.
And we were like, how do you say Wäscheladen in English?
It's a money laundry shop.
Okay. And we were like, is this a money laundry shop? Let's just go. Fuck it. And then we were like teenagers. Oh, this is so exciting. We are going without paying. So we left. And then we were so proud of each other. And like an hour later, Lars is like, oh, fuck. I think I forgot my phone in this money laundry shop. And we were so shameless that we went back to the shop And as
where we haven't paid for our food.
And as for our phone. And they didn't care that we didn't pay.
They didn't remember. Because it was a money laundry shop.
It was not like full or so. We were the only ones.
Yeah. Hmm. No, and they said, yeah, no, your phone, our friend Shampoo just took your phone. And he's in, where was that? In Marzahn or something. He's in some outback of Berlin where we had to travel then the next day.
In East Berlin. And the next day, I was never in my life in East Germany, in East Berlin. And they have like this image of being very right wing and stuff. And the next day, we went with the train, and Shampoo was first like, no, I want to sell this phone. And we talked him into getting this phone back. Your cheap, stupid phone, Lars. And we went with the train to Marzahn, which took us like an hour. And suddenly there was this Nazi concert.
And what? Had,
yes, and me and Lars were like among all these Nazis, and we are so short people, and I was kind of scared. And then we took our phone from Shampoo,
and then we went home. Yeah, there's a really popular radical right wing like Nazi rock group in Germany. They are on top of the charts all the time. And they had a huge concert there, and it was filled with their...
At that day, at my very first enter in East Berlin.
Yeah, yeah. So you have been to East Germany.
Yeah, okay, but like just so, to get a phone for 10 minutes.
So there's more comparable situations. Jaren, did you have a favorite quote?
I did. It's from, what's his name? Labrador. I think at some point was trying to get the death penalty for the guy to keep his streak. He says, "I hit a cake, but I ate it."
Yes. That was so funny. No coffee either.
Yeah. Yes, I remember that. Also, speaking of Labradors, a dog keeps showing up. It's also very leftovers.
Yeah. And Antek is shown petting the dog, and then the dog is really important to his son later. So yeah, there's a lot of the leftovers in here, or like it would be like a sappy Hollywood film. I haven't seen it, but I think Ghost Message from Sam.
The Meg Ryan Nicolas Cage movie. You mean?
Is it Meg Ryan? It's not Meg Ryan.
No,
Ghost. It's not Nicolas Lake. Cage either.
Oh, I thought City of Angels or so.
No, City of Angels is actually a remake of a German film. It's
really?
Yeah, by Wim
Wenders. Lakehouse. You're talking about Lakehouse.
No, I'm talking about Ghost.
And Patrick Swayze, Demi Moore. That's yes. What you mean.
Yes. And Whoopi Goldberg.
And Whoopi Goldberg was a medium in that movie.
Of course.
She was like a con artist. And then Patrick Swayze is really a ghost. And first time she can work as a medium and help a couple.
See, that's the scene. That's the scene with the hypnotist.
Yes.
Oh my God. Ghost is a remake of I haven't seen Ghost. I know nothing about that movie, but I firmly state it's a ripoff of No End.
It's just from probably the person who wrote Ghost. So Keselowski's movie and was inspired by that only scene.
No, but see, it also has like a subplot with money laundry. That's really? Like unionizing.
Well, so maybe everyone was inspired by this movie in Hollywood.
Yeah. Keselowski invented Hollywood. Jaren, do you agree?
I'm sure, yeah. Let's just hope they don't remake this stuff.
Well, yeah. Ghost is a remake.
Yeah, but like...
No, they steal parts of it, which is fine. But if they try to remake the whole thing, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
Like an official remake, you know.
I'm sure Ghost sucks anyway.
It was nice.
Yeah, was it?
I don't know.
It looks so bad. I only know that scene that everybody parodies with the... the clay
community.
Yes. But it's like, it's such a revolting scene. Like in so many ways, it just repels me.
I don't know.
Makes me sick.
Like I watched it on TV or something. Like
of course you did. Because on German TV, when we were teens, this fucking movie would be at all the time.
Yes, Ghost and Titanic.
Of course, always with a terrible dub. So we're only acquainted with these 90s Hollywood movies sounding like cartoon shows. It's a whole thing.
So I don't remember. I just remember that I enjoyed it at 11 or so. I don't know.
Yaren, did you enjoy Ghost?
I mean, I only remember it from watching it on TV. So I must have been super young. I don't remember shit. It never made me want to take on, I don't know, clay playing stuff.
Term of the week. I mean, did we use poetically political cinema last week?
Not that I can remember.
Yes, I think so.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we had two terms last week. Do we have any other term for this one?
Oh, we can also just use poetic.
You just. This is.
But let me do it again. We can also just use poetical cinema.
Poetical.
Philosophical cinema.
I mean, there's more fitting films or for
moving Catherine. Poem. Yeah.
No one gives a shit about the kids' cinema.
Oh, I think that could be a category.
Yeah. I think that's really good.
That's long, but I think that's really good.
Yeah, I mean, if they were cinema, sitcoms would fall into this category.
Or like Home Alone.
Okay, no one gives a shit about the child cinema is our term of the week. Any ideas as to why this is here? This doesn't fit the cult narrative. I'm ready to ditch the cult narrative and just say everybody should be cinematic 12 monkeys every week.
I mean, after watching like especially the last three, four movies, this could be also like why you should kill yourself, USB stick, with movies which just depresses you.
I mean, the suicide was kind of the happy ending.
Yeah.
So maybe someone made this USB stick full of movies to watch them to make peace with their decision to kill themselves.
Maybe.
So there was a couple of months of a depressing movie watching and then some wrist cutting.
Yeah, but we shouldn't make jokes about that.
There should have been a trigger warning somewhere before that.
Yeah.
Well, retroactively.
The simplest idea is someone, a film nerd, was in Spain and downloaded all these movies because it was...
No, accessible. But that's fucking boring.
And was such an idiot to forget it on this.
No, that's boring. That's boring. I like my cult better. Yaren, how does this fit? Why is this here?
I mean, the cult narratively, yes, you can depress people with this. But also it could be a playbook on how to sway depressed people, like the wife, Ulla.
Sway her to do what?
I mean, if the right person from the cult comes up, they could easily take them into the cult orgy. She's ready.
But nobody really did that in this film. Or maybe on like they have like, imagine this. They have like a weekend retreat. They go into like, you know, these workplace hotels. Yaren, do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
So the cult has a retreat to a conference hotel. And it's like this bleak and gray hotel. And there's a guy from the cult. He wears like a tacky, tasteless white shirt. It's tucked into his gray pants. He wears terribly big glasses. And he's standing right next to a flip chart. And he holds like a black edding. And he explains the cult members everything about how to recruit new members. And then he pulls down a screen and then he screens this film. And at several points during the film, he pauses and asks the other cult members, like the young cult members who he's teaching, questions. Like, how would you approach her now? How would you approach the prisoner now? How would you get them into the cult? So this is maybe this is educational material.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So this whole USB stick, this whole USB
that's
stick.
That's why it's also so international, you know?
Yeah, see, and it was like a touristy region where I found it. So maybe there was this cult conference hotel where they had this huge conference where they would just teach their members how to
reach Polish people, how to reach Japanese people.
How to reach depressed people in general and how to bring about the apocalypse.
Yeah. Sure.
That's what happened. Yaren, you're a genius. That's why this is here.
Okay.
How to bed depressed people into joining the cult.
Yeah. This is amazing. What are we watching next week? We're going to nail this cult. We're going to find out where they are.
Next week we have to watch more now. Next week is the festival.
Oh, the live episode. So next week we're going to have a live episode.
I'm kind of nervous.
Yes.
This is the time where I have to be like really concentrated and awake.
With no editing there. I hope people show up.
Yeah, me too. Jørn is coming.
Yeah. But there's like so much advertising.
Well, my mom will be there.
Ooh, nice.
So Nissan's mom will be there and we'll record. We were originally going to do the whole Blade trilogy just because we would have liked to watch the Blade trilogy, just the three of us, and talk about that. But then we were asked by our festival co-organizer to come up with a topic that people could get into because he said, and rightfully so, why would people show up live to see three people discuss a random movie, just have a more explosive topic. I think he himself will talk about like German superhero films or something on his live episode of his podcast, and we will talk about F.W. Murnau's Faust, and we will take that film as a jumping off point to more generally talk about the relations between horror and fascism. With my thesis going in being horror is inherently anti-fascist.
Because
you know, you see, Faust is based on this classic German tale. So horror, like we know it today, modern horror comes from classic German tales. Germans did produce a shit ton of horror and maybe even predominantly horror stories up until electing Hitler. And after that, they never started again. And like, if you look at the Soviet Union, there's like 50 something nations and 70 something years of the Soviet Union and just two horror films. So clearly there's something to be uncovered here.
Interesting. Okay. Let's see.
Yeah. So that's our live episode. That's coming up next week. Looking forward to that.
So we're going to watch the movie together in our home theater.
In our home theater. Yes. You're gonna come over to Germany. We're gonna do some Europe traveling together. Yes. And we're gonna watch F.W. Murnau's Faust.
Nice.
Great.
Nice. Cool. So see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.